Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planning leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
All right, well, welcome to Core Competencies of Next Gen Leaders. But before I kind of jump in and share with you some of what I hope will help you on your journey to either develop those competencies in yourself or to develop those competencies in others, perhaps you could just maybe share a little bit about your felt need, why you came to this workshop, so I can understand your felt need and context so that I can nuance our session together in that vein. So, hey, welcome back. Yes?
We're rebooting a Next Gen Ministry.
Okay.
It's Cambodian, and I've got five guys who really want to build and invest in.
Okay, fantastic. So, for you through that lens, these are what I hope will be some of the competencies that you want to, conversations you want to have, and some of the competencies you want to develop in some of those younger leaders. Okay, good. That helps me. Yeah.
I am a brand new youth pastor, so
yeah.
This is something I've never done. So for me, this is part of my kind of training.
Okay.
The church plan, so
you're a brand new youth worker. If you email me, I'll send you a free something that's more nuanced just for youth ministry.
Okay.
Yep. So building a solid youth ministry.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you email me directly, I'll send you a video link and a workshop that's completely just focused on youth ministry.
Okay.
Yeah. But not that this won't be on a macro level helpful, but you are that next gen leader, you're that younger leader yourself, so maybe this will sharpen you directly. Some of us are a little older and we're trying to develop your generation, you know? So we'll have both in there. So. Someone else, your context and what you're hoping for.
Church planting coordinator for a denomination in Texas, the Seventh Church there, and we are starting a lot of millennial church plants.
Yeah.
So great. I'm looking for a bit more of an insight on that. But also in my own plant, we're trying to develop just 11 to 17 year old leaders.
Wow.
Just point them out and then
love it.
Working with them, so I wanted to see what I can.
Okay, you should have probably come to the workshop I did this morning. That was maybe nuanced for some of that, but anyway, I could still maybe.
Do you get materials?
I could get you the outline, and actually they recorded it, so maybe they could get that to you. That would be a help. Yeah. So fantastic. Yes?
I've been in our church a year and a half ago, and I just kind of went straight from being a youth pastor for a year to church planning and dealing all that stuff by myself.
So. Nothing like just ramping up the challenge there, big guy. Yeah.
So,
that youth ministry thing was so easy. You mastered it in a year. You thought, hey, what's next? Let's plan a church. Genius.
I'm just that good.
Yes, I get it. I get prodigy.
What about main stage next year?
Yes.
No.
Prodigy, baby.
Do it. So anyway, so I'm young. I don't know what I'm doing. I need this.
Cool.
Me and our church needs it for
love
the leader to raise up.
Love it. Fantastic. Thank you for your transparency. Anyone else?
Yeah. It's JC from Manila, Philippines.
Yeah.
I'm into campus ministry, student ministry.
Yeah.
And as we try to look for the next generation,
we really need
some guidance on how to choose them and maybe the competencies that we want to developing them.
Wonderful.
So that we'll be able to raise up next generation leaders for our church, for our community.
Fantastic. I love it. So this session will dovetail with the one we did this morning.
Wonderful.
So I think you'll see them complementary.
Thank you.
So, all right. To that end, so everybody stand up. Put your stuff down. Find one person that you don't know. You didn't come to the conference with, and I'm going to give you an assignment, all right? So let's jump right into it. Competency one, things that I wished the first pastor I worked for, I wish he would have encouraged me to focus on some of these issues. I felt so much of a burden and pressure to grow this booming youth ministry. That's where all my energy went. the external part of ministry. And I wish someone would have sat me down and given me permission to work a little bit more on my inner life and inner priorities. And so I remind young leaders, hey, focus on what matters most. Don't just think about building a big, flashy youth ministry or ministry wherever you are. Think about who you are on the inside. And these are some of the priorities. Your personal faith and spiritual vitality. If you're married, a healthy marriage. Or if you're single, a healthy, you know, single life, that you still have friends, that your best friends aren't just the people you're ministering to in ministry, right? That your family has some time and attention. I have four kids, and there were times when I was a little bit healthier and balanced, and there were times when I was, you know, I've been out of balance and traveling too much and not giving kids the attention they deserve. And by God's grace, you know, I'm still their superhero, you know, type of thing. You know, they still love me and show grace for me. But I wish, you know, someone, you know, would have sat me down and just said, hey, Larry, you know, when was the last time you just hung out, you know, and asked me those hard questions? And so here's what I tell you. If you're a little bit older, boomer like me, trying to pour into the next generation, give those leaders that you're pouring into permission to focus on these things. Because if you're a boomer or a builder generation person, we did ministry at the expense of being healthy in some of these areas, if we're real honest. All right? At least I did. And I know some of us don't want to have to go there. But even our personal health, and here I mean our physical health. I mean, you got pastors like, you know, giving the best of themselves to the kingdom who, you know, just aren't physically healthy. You know, we'll talk about other sins in the world, but you know, we're not managing our, you know, our diet and exercise plan very well. And I will tell you this: if you want to develop next gen leaders, you have to take care of yourself well enough that there's something that compels them to want to follow you in character and person. And so it's just how the next generation's wired. So don't let too many good things choke out the best things for your life, for you in life. These areas will shape your life priorities. So here's what I'm saying. If you are that young emerging leader, I'm encouraging you to make some of these areas a priority. If you're a developer of next gen leaders, I'm encouraging you to ask the hard questions of those you're developing about some of these areas. If they're still single, ask them, hey, you know, what? Tell me about the type of person you'd like to marry. Tell me about the kind of father or mom you hope to be one day. Let them start, you know, visualizing that and dreaming about what God wants to do. Hey, what are you doing to stay physically and emotionally healthy? What are you doing in your life? You know? And so I want to encourage you to be thinking about some of those things, all right? So here's one of my challenges to you. What I would encourage you to do with some of your some of the folks you're mentoring is help them write out some statements, some life priorities in these areas: faith, marriage, if they're married, if they're single, maybe to write out a priority statement, or family. What do you want it to look like? What do you want your health to look like personally and relationally? And then your calling comes down here. Usually what happens, next gen leaders, we all put calling and what we do for Jesus, we put it at the top. And then if we have time, we maybe hang out with Jesus, or we maybe have a date night to nurture our marriage, or, you know, hang out with some other friends if we're single. But usually ministry consumes everything, and then we try to do all these other things with any little amount of time we might have left. And that's what jacks us up. And that's why we become unhealthy, because ministry, we get sucked into the vortex of all the demands of ministry, and it's never done. You know, there's always more to do. And so at some point, one of the things I like about youth sports is it forces me to put a period on my day and have to run to one of my kids' games in the afternoon. Because otherwise, I would work till 6:30, whatever it is. And that, I love when baseball and softball season is here, because I have to say, well, that's all I can get done today, because I have to go to Malia's game or practice, or I can get to Diego's game, you know? And that helps me stay and be that engaged dad. and just part of what helps me. But anyway, these are, so that's just where I wanted to go, where we start with some of the competencies. So get focused on what matters most. So that's the competency. Give leaders the permission to focus on what matters most. If they could hear from you say, hey, it's not just what you do in the kingdom that matters. I want you to be healthier and more balanced than maybe I was on the journey. You're helping next gen leaders, you know, put some healthier things in their life than just the work of the ministry. And then calling comes out of that balance. Okay? Competency two, help leaders get perspective. Here's a tool that I love. This helps me help people get perspective. And so I'm not going to give you a ton of time on it, but you can go back and reference this. So what I tell leaders is, hey, when you're ever kind of in a tough situation where you're losing focus, here's a tool that will help you get perspective. And you, if you want on your outline, put two or three things in this box. What's right in your life right now? I know there's drama. I know there's pain. I know there's stuff that's jacked up. I get it. But what is right in your life? Put one or two little bullet statements right there. What's right now in your life? What the enemy's going to try to do is to get you discouraged, to think that everything's messed up. Everything's broken. Everything's falling apart. He just tries to beat us down. He's the accuser. Comes to steal, kill, and destroy. And even when it's hard, there's still a couple good things in there. So put those in there. And then the next box, upper right. What's wrong in your life right now? What are one or two things? Just put one or two things that's just not where you want it right now. Personally, relationally, whatever it is, just put some. And then lower left, what's confused in your life right now? What's confused in your life right now? It might just be one thing. I'm trying to launch this program, and I'm not sure if I should launch it in January or if I should just force it in here right now. You know, it could be as basic as that. I don't know whether to launch this new group that I'm trying to mentor on Thursday nights or Monday nights. It could be that basic, or it could be big. Big and hairy and confusing. Maybe just put one thing there. And then in this last box, what's missing in your life? What's missing? One of the recent times I've done this, what was missing in my life, I didn't have a hobby. I was so busy doing ministry that I didn't do anything fun for myself. And I had to acknowledge that. Another time when I've done this, I noticed, no wonder I'm so stressed out. I haven't been disciplined with my workout regimen, and that's a good stress reliever for a driven guy like me. I needed that. And I wasn't doing it. I was off my game. Sometimes I put, hey, I haven't been hanging out consistently enough with refueling friends. Everything that I'm doing is going out to others, but there's nothing coming back. There's no iron sharpening iron. And so at different times I've had different things that were missing. So is there anything that comes to mind? What's missing right now for you to be healthy and whole? All right, so here's what I'm going to ask you to do. Turn to a neighbor and share one thing that's right and one thing that's missing. All right, just quick, like 3 or 4 minutes type of thing. Just turn to a neighbor. Let's see. Sorry I can't give you guys more time. It's so powerful to be in community and share. But I need one or two of you to share what's missing, just short and sweet. What can you take away to say, hey, for me to be more healthy and whole, be good if I could find some time to schedule this, or what's missing?
Proper rest.
Just getting a little more rest than you are, right? Yeah. I heard someone tell me one time when I, They said, Larry, sometimes the most spiritual thing you can do is to get a good night's sleep. You know, because, you know, the more tired you get, then things get bigger than they really need to be because you're just exhausted. And so good insight. Someone else, what's missing?
Out? Yeah, I was talking to me. Creative outlet.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, being a family ministry, I mean, we have creative opportunities.
Yes.
But sometimes you just get a bit bogged down with the details, the planning, and so forth. And it can be nice to, like, actually do something that's non-ministry related.
Yes.
For me to go and just draw.
Yes.
And sketch that I don't have to turn into a graphic or, or to promote an event of some sort. So my
encouragement to you would be, like, that once a month you schedule a day away from the office, a work day, get your pastor's permission, and go to the city, go to a museum, take yourself to a nice meal, carve out some time to draw, paint, whatever you do, read, take a nap. But how much healthier of an artist, more of a creative would you be if you gave yourself permission to break away and do that? Or maybe you do that once a month, and maybe once a quarter you take that day, and maybe there's three or four other creatives that you know, and you guys maybe share part of that day together for lunch, and what are you learning, and whatever you creatives talk. I'm not creative, so I don't know what you talk about. Hey, what's the latest color palette coming down the pipe? And what are you using? You know, whatever. I don't know how you guys do it, you know. But anyway, but find a way. Find a way.
That's great.
But you got to give yourself permission, because otherwise, you know, after a while, the well is going to be dry, and you're going to have you've had those times where you have X amount of time to get a project done, and either you're going to throw it together out of just winging it and getting it done, or if you have a wealth of energy and creativity, the project's going to come a lot quicker because you're at a better place, you know?
Can't get what you don't have.
Exactly. Yeah. So, one other, I think you had your first name?
Janie,
that's right,
yep.
Janie, sorry.
Mine's vacation.
Okay.
Yeah, like I had someone ask me recently, and I realized
when
I
was the last
away
time?
For 3 years.
Oh, cool.
I travel for our denomination and
that's
to visit
different.
Family, but it's not restful.
Yeah. Like, what's vacation to you? Like, by a pool, on a beach, reading, listening to music?
Totally.
Okay, you're in California. Can you stay a couple extra days and go to the beach? It's going to be 100. It's going to be 100 this weekend.
I know. Well, I am because I'm in Huntington Beach, but then it's not vacation because I'm with mom and dad.
Okay, here's a tip. Here's a tip. If you go to the Hyatt Regency Huntington Beach,
I know it's awesome.
You can pay $50 and get a day pass to the spa.
Mm-hmm.
You can use all the amenities and all the pools for $50. You don't have to spend the $400 to stay there. But for $50, you could go to the spa, steam room, all the pools. Maybe give yourself a day before you go, or go across to the beach. I have a meeting at the beach. Me and God, we're like this. Me and Jesus are hanging out. So anyway, fine. I don't know. I know that's it. But don't miss the opportunity this weekend with the weather before you leave. So anyway, here's what I would tell those of us in the leadership demand. Sometimes this tool will help us get perspective. Give yourself some time, but share this tool with some young leaders. Because sometimes there's stuff that's bugging them, but they don't know how to describe it or whatever. So just say, hey, fill in a few of these things in the box. And then you give this tool to a leader, and then now you can know what's wrong. Oh, you want, you know, more, you know, some other opportunities here to develop in our ministry. You know, oh, that's what's bugging you. Okay. What's missing? You know, a leader, maybe a creative. I did a similar thing with a creative. He was he played the guitar. And he said, man, I got married, we had a kid, and I don't get to jam with my friends anymore, you know. And so I said, well, why don't you find a place where you guys could go. He used to hang out as a single dude, and they would jam till like 3 in the morning, you know, a couple times a month. I said, well, give yourself permission to do that once a month. And he goes, oh, that's so good. So all the, you know, we got the band back together now type of thing, you know. And once a month they do that, even though he's still married with kids and all that. So find what gives you life here. So for you, this is the kind of stuff that keeps us healthier on the leadership journey. But for your next gen leaders, share these kind of thoughts and tools with them so that they can get healthier, stay healthier from the beginning. Quickly, let me run through this. Character first. This is the competency. Character matters more than your competency and ministry, the skills. What you can do for Jesus matters less than who you are. I'm more concerned about who you are, your being, not what you can do for Jesus. So help leaders know that. Because a lot of millennials think because they're high capacity, they're, you know, they're so digital and natives, and they can do so much stuff. They want to hide behind their competency in terms of skill set. Well, no. I'm more concerned about who you are on the inside, even in the dark, you know? Who are you? And so here's some potential pitfalls. I'm not going to unpack them all. You get these. Finances, their use and abuse, the abuse of power, pride. How are you managing, you know, your pride? Have these conversations. Share this stuff with the leaders you're developing. Sexual misconduct. How are you managing your sex drive? What do you, you know, how are you handling relationships in the ministry or in the neighborhood community with members of the opposite sex? Don't assume they're doing well. Ask them, how are you managing? If you're mentoring guys, you got to talk about stuff, about porn, you got to talk about stuff, their thought life, how are you managing your sex drive? Don't assume they're doing well. Ask them. Sisters, whatever you got to talk about motives of the heart, you know. Hey, who this week, how did you do on, you know, just trying to get attention from members of the opposite sex? How did you manage that? That pressure, that temptation you maybe felt? You know, how did you handle that? Unhealthy family relationships. Big pitfall for all of us that are married and with family. Plateauing. A leader who stops reading, learning, growing, or maturing. And so, I apologize that I can't give you time. This would be, I only have a few more minutes. So, I'm going to take the time for a second since we're here. And if we don't finish, we don't finish. So, turn to your neighbor again. And I want you to take a moment and share, if you're real honest, which of these areas might you be a little bit vulnerable in? Plateauing is always the easiest one to share, so I hope you don't all just share that. That's the safest answer here. That's like Jesus. You know, Jesus is always the answer, right? So, but which of these pitfalls might the enemy use at this time to take you out, or just to weaken you or tempt you? Where's that potential threatening area? So turn to the same person you just talked to a minute ago, and talk about that for a second.
For me, it's unhealthy. That's why I said for like, yeah. So, you know, with the wife, I'm not being negative, but I gotta love her. And it's not all her fault, it's just what happens. I love my ministry more than I love her, or my ministry more than I love her. So that's just one, but then when you have kids, all the kids get 21. Now you've got your own church, you've got to care for you. The character issue of our family is my priority. But I think it's so important that I gotta watch out for that. And I'll be honest with you, so many times I think it's in the street. I get more, but I spend more time doing the other street.
I'm going to go to the next one.
Can I just remind you, character still matters.
Amen.
And enemy's going to always come after us and try to take us out. And so let's not pretend that we're bulletproof. You know, when we're younger, we actually think we are a little bit without realizing it. But as we get older, we know better. And so put some of those things in place so that we're healthier, and that there's relationships that are sharpening us and life-giving for us, that we're not, it's not just always going out into others. Like, men, is there one dude in your life, at least, that you meet with every other week, or once a month at the minimum, that just has permission to mess with your stuff and ask you the hard questions? Someone that's life-giving. I have a friend named Ed, and sometimes we meet for a prayer walk, and we just talk and share life, and we share our junk, man. We're both trying to still be better husbands, you know, and grow in that. And we're still both broken and messed up, dude. But I'm so grateful that I have a safe friend to keep it real with. I don't give them all the Sunday school answers. Talk real talk with them. We all need people like that.
Can I just say, can I encourage just all the guys right now to find one? If you don't have one,
yeah, man.
You need to get one.
Yeah.
You just need to get one.
Yeah.
I've had one for 12 years.
Yeah.
You've been moving 3 different states.
Yeah.
Always found one.
Yeah.
And it's a life changer.
Yeah, it is.
So, anyways, I just want to be encouraged.
Pray about it. Appreciate that. I would say more than pray about it.
No, I think pray that God will deliver one. Because every time I move, I say, God, deliver one.
Yeah.
And he did.
Nice.
So, I'm just saying, to make it happen.
And it takes intentionality to do that. And so find that person that you feel like you respect and want to learn from. And hopefully it's something they want to learn from you a little bit. But schedule some time with them. Ladies, that sister girlfriend that loves you for who you are, not for what you do in the kingdom, right? So anyway, and here's where it's going to take us. Schedule some life-giving activities. And so the first, so that the competency is schedule life-giving activities. Know what refuels you. Okay, so I talked about Janie, about getting to that beach, that vacation, getting there, like scheduling that. Nobody can do that for her. She has to make the time, make it a priority, you know? And same with all of us. What refuels you? So, in the margins of your paper there, what are the life-giving activities that refuel you? We're so busy doing ministry, we don't even make to do some of these things. Because it fills up with ministry. And I get it. But look, for you to be healthier and stronger, identify the life-giving activities that you need to schedule to be at your best. Far too many leaders are so busy meeting other people's needs that few of us know how to actually, what actually refuels our own souls. So, put a couple things down in your notes there. What is life-giving for you? I realize you may not be giving yourself permission. Alex said if he gives himself permission to paint or to draw, you know, that's life-giving. There's other things, I'm sure, in addition to that. But just put two or three things down there for yourself. And let me say this while you're writing. I want you to make a distinction between soft and hard refills. Soft refills versus hard refills. And here's what I mean by that. A soft refill for me, I like sports. I can go veg out in front of Sports Center, ESPN, right? That's a soft refill. I'll stay up late, I'll catch up on all the sports, but it didn't really give my soul what it really needs. It just kind of, I was just able to gel out and catch up on stuff. Soft refill. Hard refill might have been making sure I read with one or two of my kids, tucked them into bed, prayed with them, kissed them. The next morning, I'm going to be a lot more fulfilled that I did that than just settled for the cheesy soft refill. You with me? A soft refill is going to a movie. Maybe it gives you life. It might just be a soft refill. And maybe what you really needed is 2 hours, that same 2 hours invested with the life-giving brother that was going to pray over you after you shared and talked and poured out your guts, and then they prayed over you. You might be at a healthier place after those 2 hours versus the 2 hours just sitting in a movie theater and you walked out and were entertained. You with me?
Yes.
All right. So that's what I mean by know what refuels you, because there's soft refills and there's hard refills. And so I'm encouraging you to do the ones that are more on the hard side that really produce life in you. Okay? Next one. Competency 5. Schedule time for life-giving relationships. Know who refuels you. We talked about the what, now the who. So write a few names down there. Who are the life-giving friends? If you allowed yourself to have maybe once a month have a 3-hour, 4-hour, you know, time with them, you'd be at a healthier place. See, the enemy's strategy is to keep us isolated and depleted. Doing the work of the ministry, it looks good on the outside, but on the inside, we're slowly dying. We don't even realize it. We're bleeding out. So, write the names of some of those people. And before you leave this conference, I hope you'll text someone and say, can we get coffee next week? Can we get lunch? Can we get breakfast? Whatever it is for you. Guys, if you're married and you have little kids, I wish someone would have told me this when I was in my, you know, in that phase of life, when they're little toddlers. Here's a tip. I would encourage you to say to your wife, honey, when sometime in the next couple weeks when I could take the kids and you could just get some time for yourself or to hang out with your friends, and I'll just take the kids. And just ask the question and let her decide when that fits for her schedule and her friends or whatever, and you schedule that time. And that will be life-giving for your spouse. I wish someone would have told me that as a young leader. I learned it through messing it up and my wife getting depleted, and then she would say, well, why don't you ever initiate for me to have time for myself and this and that. I was like, oh, because I've never been a husband before with toddlers. Like, I don't know the rules on this, you know? So I'm just giving you some cliff notes, fellas. So, like, stuff I've jacked up. That's going to be my next book. Stuff I've jacked up that I'm trying to save you young guys from. So, schedule that time with some life-giving friends next week. And here's when you meet with that, brothers, when you meet with that dude that you're, you know, I'm asking you to have some real conversation. Not like, hey, man, how about them Dodgers, whatever, you know. I'm asking you to ask some hard questions of each other. So these are just a sample. It's in your outline, so I'm not going to read through them all. Ladies, that when you meet with some sisters, and these are more probably mostly catered for guys, but here's two things I do want you to see. I want you to see that the conversation goes deep, where you have to be vulnerable with someone. That there's someone in your life that you can share the junk with, the raw side of life, because you're more than just a ministry machine. You are a son or a daughter of God. You're a person, and with that you have brokenness and beauty and strengths and capacity, but you need someone on the journey with you. And not enough people are telling leaders this, and so we just keep focusing on doing stuff in the kingdom and not being healthier. The last thing I'd like you to do is, this is one of my, I wish more young leaders knew this. Get into the habit of calling a friend to rat yourself out when you feel vulnerable in one of these vital areas, all right? So I work in the urban context, so when you rat someone out, it's not a good term, you know? So I try to redeem the term to say, so I have the habit, when I'm not doing well, I'll pick up the 100-pound telephone, and I'll call my friend Ed. And I'll say, hey, Ed, can we get together? I'm not doing so well. And so sometimes, if I'm not doing well, but I need some time and we can get together in the next couple days, that's what it'll be. Sometimes I'll say, Ed, I'm in a bad place, I'm exhausted, Jamie and I had a fight yesterday, I'm just feeling vulnerable and distant, and I'll just wrap myself out. And he'll say, let's pray right now, Larry. And I'll be driving somewhere, and we're praying on the phone. Because the enemy, what he wants to do is to get us isolated or to get us depressed and discouraged in our junk and thought, negative thoughts, so that he can get us to do something stupid that will mess us up in life, character, and ministry. And so I try to tell young leaders, hey, when you're struggling, call me. Call somebody. Call a friend. So I've had leaders tell me, man, this principle saved my bacon because I feel tempted. I got some dudes that I mentor that are single. Well, they, in their BC days, they used to do a lot of dumb stuff. So I've had one guy, one night, he called another leader that we were in the same mentoring group. Another single guy goes, dude, I feel like being stupid and going to this strip club tonight. So it was like midnight. And this other guy goes, oh, heck no, man. I'm not letting you do that. I love you too much to let you do that. He goes, you stay right where you are. So guy gets in his car, drives across LA. It took, at that time of night, it still took like 45 minutes to get to where he is. And he spent the night there, this other dude. They just hung out there. They laughed. They played video games. And they got through that temptation because that one leader came out of a bunch of junk before he met Jesus. And there were some deep-rooted patterns in his life. And he was trying to get set free, but the enemy comes, trying to jack people up. But because he had himself out, he called, and he picked up the phone, and he called a safe friend, another Christian brother. And so, anyway, that's where I want my young leaders that I'm mentoring to get to, where they have healthier best practices when they're going through crap. And that's where the reason I share some of this stuff with you is because I want us to be those healthier leaders, and I want us to model that, but I also want us to invite that out of the leaders we influence. Okay, and this is the stuff, the external stuff, why probably most of you came to the workshop, and I kind of focused more on the inner life formation. But competency six, we'll just call them inner life competencies. And so things like self-awareness, who am I and why? With your young leaders, they need to know some of the pain in their story. They need to talk about that. They need to become more self-aware. Why are you, have you ever asked yourself why you're so angry? You know, ask one of your leaders like that. Hey, what are you afraid of, man? Tell me about your fears.
I ain't afraid of nothing, man.
Yeah, I know. You're a tough guy, but hey, we're right here, man. We all got fears. When everyone's gone home and all that, what messes with you on the inside. You're trying to get them to have those inner conversations that they, or I'm sorry, you're trying to get them to have that external conversation about the inner narrative conversations they have inside their minds, right? And so you're trying to get them to be more self-aware. All right? Self-leadership, character formation. You're asking them to learn the skill of leading themselves better. So you might talk about self-discipline. Hey, you have huge capacity, but because you don't have a strong work ethic or self-discipline, man, you have this huge capacity and calling on your life, but you're never gonna be all God created you for, because you're not willing to learn self-discipline. I'm just keeping it real, man. You're gonna speak that in, you know. And if you're willing, I hope you learn some self-discipline. But it's going to be the hardest, best thing you've ever had to do. Right? So those are the kind of conversations, if you're the developer, if you're the mentor, those are some of the conversations you need to have, because they need to learn self-awareness. They don't even know that they have a hard time with commitment or self-discipline. They just think all authority figures, have been critical of them. They don't realize it's some brokenness on their own, right? Self-leadership, that they gotta step up. Well, some of us are working with young men that they have leadership capacity, but they've never been developed because their dad was never in their life to make them get up, mow the lawn, have to, you know, do hard things. God bless these awesome single moms that are do in the Latino context. Our moms do way too much for us boys, especially. Girls have to run the household. With mom, boys get off scot-free. So if you work with young Latino kids, we got some work to do to raise up these boys from boys to men. And so I'm just saying, like, if you've got some young Latino leaders you're trying to build up, it's similar in the African-American context. If you work in the hood, like my brother here, I think, does in the front here. But we got to teach some of these kids some of these skills. It's to break that cycle. And it's not easy. So, and then self-development, intentionally developing my strengths and minimizing my weaknesses. And so, these are just a few books here. There's so much more you could do, but all that I want to get you to think about is have conversations with some of your young leaders about things that would help them become more self-aware. You could have them take a Strengths Finder test. You could have them take the DISC test. You can help them do some of those things. But you want them to get toward greater self-awareness and to begin to take responsibility for developing themselves. Any questions about this or comments from your context? This is the stuff that messes most leaders up. They don't understand who they are, how they got here, why, you know. Nobody has those conversations. Give you a quick example. Here I was, this Latino leader, but there's no Latino pastor that was trying to hire me when I got graduated from right out of school to be their youth pastor. But this white church had the money and the budget, so they hired me. So I was the one Latino. I was like the chip in the chocolate chip, ice cream, and on staff. Now, in Latino context, time is a little bit relative. I don't know if you guys realize that, right? Same in Filipino culture a little bit too, right? And so I remember I came to my first staff meeting, all white staff, one Latino brother. That would be me, right? First staff meeting. I rolled in 10 minutes late to staff meeting. And I remember that pastor, he mad-dogged me. From the time I walked through the door, he just went, he watched me until I sat down. Now, I could feel him looking at me, but I did not make eye contact. In the hood, you don't make eye contact because that's going to start something. So you pretend like, yeah, I don't see you, dude. And I just sat down all cool on the outside, right? But on the inside, I was like, oh, these guys don't play. Like, 10 a.m. staff meeting, like 9:50. Like, beat a staff meeting at 9:50. And we're going to start at 10 a.m., right? And in Latino culture, 10 minutes late. Oh, we're good, bro. I'm in staff meeting, man. So my point, the pastor never took me aside later and said, you'll never be late again. He just said it indirectly through that nonverbal communication. And fortunately, I was intuitive enough to pick up on it. Some of the leaders that we work with, they don't pick up on that stuff. And you have to have the more direct conversation. Yo, dog, you can be 10 minutes early, but you can't be 5 minutes late. That's not how we play up in here. So whether you run an urban or suburban ministry or whoever you're developing, we don't realize that about some of our, we're not very self-aware, or some of it's cultural, some of it's just straight up never been trained, never been developed. Yes?
So in leadership, when do you justify culture versus developing those strengths and minimizing the weaknesses? Because sometimes cultural things can actually
be better.
More weaknesses than strengths.
Yeah.
Because I'm also Hispanic.
Yeah.
Well, technically I'm Hispanic and Korean, so I'm super punctual sometimes and kind of lazy. But when do you?
Or normal.
So we're trying to talk about that self-development with leaders. Like, when do you justify strength based upon your culture in trying to develop that leadership aspect and trying to minimize those weaknesses?
Yeah. So
where do you justify? How do you do it? How do you approach that?
So for example, so the culture of whatever ministry you're in, the ministry that I was in, the dominant culture controlled how that church culture was run. Very punctual. Time was not relative. It was absolute. And it was, you know, in punto, right? You know? And I had to adjust to the context if I wanted to work there, right? Education, because this guy was very driven academically, he pushed me toward an MDiv right after I graduated. Well, I was the first one in my family to graduate from college. I was like a hero, rock star in my hometown, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, no, man, if you're going to work here, you're going to get an MDiv. I was like, oh, shoot. He wasn't going to help pay for it. I had to get out of these student loans. So he was pushing me because I didn't have those cultural values as a Latino, right? So I acquiesced to what was expected of me if I was going to work there. But on the other side, relationally and warmth, he told me later in life, we're still friends to this day. He said, you know what? You are always the heart of the church. I was the head. He was this smart guy that could preach these sermons. But I was always, over time, I was the guy that would come up and do the announcements and welcome people. He goes, dude, people loved you, man. They liked it because I could teach a sermon, but those people didn't love you, man. So my Latino culture and warmth and familia and all of that relational stuff, over time, he appreciated that, and that enhanced the church and what happened from the pulpit. So that's where I was able to infuse some of my cultural upbringing and recalibrate the culture of the church overall. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's an example of when it was.
Yes, sir. Yeah, Larry, as you've been talking about stuff, things have been percolating. I remember a German philosopher by the name of Goethe that said, may the things that matter most never be at the mercy of things that matter least.
Yeah. That's
and a guy by the name of Peter Drucker, who's a guru in leadership, said, in every job there's about 6 to 10 critical success factors that either will make you or break you. I would rather do a few things very well than a lot of things mediocre, but a lot of times we're stretched because the urgent takes precedence over the important.
Good.
And I'll end with this, the Pareto principle, maybe some of you probably heard this, that 20% of what you do will yield 80% of the results. 20% of the people at church do 80% of the work, 20% give 80% of the tithes, 20% of a company's products will yield 80% of financial dividends.
Yes.
And it's the same way in our lives.
Yeah,
we get caught on the intrusions in our lives, like the phone calls and the meetings, and get wrapped up in the minutia of the 80% that only produces 20% of the results.
Yes.
As opposed to the 20%, and the 20% is what you're gifted in.
Yes.
It's the things that generate energy in you. You like to do them. You know you're good at them. Always work your time for those things.
Yes.
Make sure you don't let the 80% take the
rule. And rule you, right? Great insight, brother. And so what I'm trying to do is give you the cliff notes to some of the 20% of the priorities for you to be thinking about what you do and how you live is through that lens. And so thank you, brother, for sharing. And so the last one here, competency 7. These are some of the leadership competencies that I think next-gen leaders need. Now, they don't have all of these, but these are ones that at least if they saw a grocery list of some of these things, they could begin to learn these and develop these. So vision casting. You know, you can't be a leader without some measure of being able to chart a vision. Ability to communicate. Some of the leaders you're mentoring, they want to learn how to speak or write or even to do healthy conflict resolution. They don't have some of those basic tools. But communication is key. Instant. When you go through this list, you know, let's talk about vision. You know, money follows vision if you're in fundraising. People follow vision if you're in a church. They want to know, hey, what's this church about? Where are we going? What's our kingdom dream for this next season? And so let some of your leaders in on that, but also ask your leaders. They want to learn how to communicate. Well, what do they mean by that? Well, I want to speak. Okay, well, let's develop you. Let's talk about an outline. Let's talk about, you know, effective communication skills. Let's give them not only the behind-the-scenes development opportunities, but also maybe some public opportunities. So start team teaching with some of your leaders. Start creating space for them to have a platform in your ministry, wherever they want to develop as communicators, all right? Multiplying leaders or leadership development. So let me ask you, what do you do with some of the young leaders around you? Do you meet with them a couple times a month? What does that meeting look like? Do you have food? Is it training? Is it conversational? Is it just lecture? You know, I feel bad I have an hour and I'm already over that. That I couldn't let you guys do more interaction with one another. That's a powerful part of this. It's just a lot to cover in an hour. But anyway, my point is, what are you doing to multiply leaders? So for me, here's a simple way that I do this with some leaders. I will meet, I develop a lot of emerging leaders that want to be, they're either youth pastors or church planters. And so for some of these leaders, they come from all over the city, different ministries. So I'll usually meet once a month, and I'll ask them for 6 hours of their day once a month. And I'll make them read a book a month. So they have to show up having read that book. Show up. I usually schedule it at a friend's house. I have a couple board members that have really nice beach houses. So it's a cool spot to want to hang out. And then I'll cater in a nice meal. And we'll spend 6 hours together. The first part is food and just letting them, you know, just like refuel and rest a little. Then I'll maybe send them out in twos for a little prayer walk on the beach. And then we'll come back and I'll have them talk. We'll start taking the chapter by chapter. And I'll just say, hey, what are some of the takeaways that you personally gained from chapter one? And they're sharing with one another, iron sharpening iron, you know. And we'll go through the book. The book is usually something related to leadership development, character formation, or theology. And I just want them to be readers. And I always tell them, leaders are readers and readers are leaders. Mm-hmm. And so we'll engage. We'll spend about 6 hours toward the end of the day. We go back to social, relational. Let them play football on the beach for an hour or, just rest and socialize. But anyway, that's just a simple model that I use to develop some of these high power leaders that I'll pull together. And we'll do that for a whole year. At one point in the year, we might hike Half Dome in Yosemite, and I'll push them out of their comfort zone. A lot of urban guys they don't like the mountains and hiking and camping and stuff like that, so I'll push them out of their comfort zone. But that's part of the way I do some leadership development. But that's just as an example. You do it the way you do it, but I'm saying keep it relational, add food, keep it at a cool place. I make guys in that, I call it riding the hot seat. I make them sit down and share their junk and their story with everybody in the group. And at one point, everybody rides the hot seat, and then we end up praying over them. That takes maybe an hour per guy or hour and a half sometimes. But I want them to learn vulnerability and to be real with their brokenness. And so, anyway, so quickly, let me just finish and let you guys go delegation and empowerment, leading through others. This is a key concept that your young leaders need to have conversations about. How do you do that? Team building, interpersonal skills, emotional intelligence stuff, team building. What are you doing to build your team? And what can they be equipped to do when they develop teams on their own? Fundraising, man, ministry takes money, man. I didn't realize. I wish I learned this in seminary, but I had to learn it through the School of Hard Knocks. But now I teach classes on it. So by God's grace, you know, we're still here. Networking and collaboration, time management, setting priorities. If you work with young leaders who maybe haven't come out of highly structured, like I did as a young Latino, I had to learn time management. This was before smartphones. This white dude that was on my youth staff, he was MBA business grad from UCLA. He's on my youth staff. He's awesome with kids, right? And he goes, man, I got a bunch of these. So his corporate job, it was back in the day when the Franklin planner, did anyone ever have a Franklin planner? Yeah. A hard planner, right? He hands me this whole box, you know, with the planner, back in the day, cassette tapes and all that, right? He goes, hey, dude, you got a lot of capacity, Larry, but you're never going to realize it if you don't do a better job at managing your time. Bam! I was like, dang. Okay. And I was the youth pastor, and he was a volunteer on my team, right? But he was right. He was right. And he hands me this planner, and I'm like, time management. Man, I've heard that. What is that? You know? So I listened to those tapes, and I learned that whole system. And now I'm like a geek, you know? Like, it's all in my phone. You can't, you know, I'm really good about that. But it was a white brother that told me about time management, setting priorities. And so, man, some of the leaders developing, they've never had some of that called out of them or given a tool to better understand it. So I'm just saying, we have to be part of that, developing that in them. And then lastly, organizational development, systems, structures, resources, HR best practices, board governance. Anyone have run a nonprofit or ever started a nonprofit? So you have to learn fundraising and board governance and all that stuff. The joys of running a nonprofit. Gotta love that. Yeah. Strategic planning. I went to seminary. I never learned what strategic planning was. I get to this church. I told you they were pretty business oriented. And then I learned strategic planning. I was like, whoa, this is a good tool. So now I teach that to next gen leaders because I want them to know strategic planning. But I didn't know that. Budget development. That church, they're like, hey, turn in your budget by Monday for your youth ministry. You know, and I had to go to my friend who was at this big youth ministry, white church up the street, and we went to seminary together. I said, hey, man, can I get a sample of your budget, man? I got to turn one in. I don't even know how to do that. So as a young leader, there were so many things expected of me that I didn't know how to do. But fortunately, I was willing to ask others that had that skill set. So let's keep making and building young leaders together, and I know I gotta let you go. If anyone wants to stay in touch, I have some cards up here. If anybody works with urban young people, we have a free discipleship toolkit that we've developed. It's all digitally driven through your phone or laptop, and love to share it with you. Help me. We have this bold vision to see 75,000 urban youth in life-changing discipleship with a local youth worker by 2020. So if you'd like to launch one of those groups or your staff to do that, love to have you in the mix. Let me pray a blessing over you before you go. Lord, thank you for these developers of next-gen leaders. Thank you for what you spoke to us about in our own journey, what's missing, and some of the things we need to take time to prioritize so that we can be healthier and more whole. But Lord, we ask that you'd give us eyes to see what we need to see and courage to live it out. Lord, give to each one according to their need. They've come away to this conference, but I pray that you would meet them and refuel each one according to the need. Renew their hope. Pray that you go before them, strengthen them for the journey. In Jesus' name.
Amen. Amen.